We've got a lot to get into with you here today on the show. Appreciate you taking time to join us. I guess as you look back for Tennessee against Bowling Green, some plays that were made, obviously at the offensive line of scrimmage and the defensive line of scrimmage, Tennessee was dominant in that game. Some missed throws as well by Joe Milton. What stood out to you the most against Bowling Green? What were your takeaways from Tennessee's point of view in that game?
Yeah, I thought it was the inconsistencies offensively. It was kind of the main thing I walked away from. I thought the defense did exactly what it should, given that they were playing such a lowly program. I mean, arguably the worst Power 5 or Group of 5 program going on in FBS. But I thought Joe Milton was really inconsistent. I thought the wide receivers were really inconsistent. I thought that was kind of the tail of it for me. The running backs played well, but the passing game was really inconsistent.
Okay, so inconsistent to the point that, look, Josh Heupel, of course, is not going to think or certainly not going to say anything about a quarterback switch or even a permanent quarterback switch. But I do wonder this week, Mike, and you, like me, know what Narduzzi can do to quarterbacks just with his scheme. You know, I do wonder if Joe Milton doesn't take some strides here. You know, this is a big game for Tennessee, a game that Tennessee really needs when you look at that whole schedule. You know, I wonder if, you know, there may be a switch just to get a spark, even if it's not necessarily, you know, a permanent move.
Yeah, and I'm curious about that too. I mean, I think this is such a different test just with the way that, I mean, yeah, Narduzzi plays his corners, plays his secondary, and Milton missed throws against a bad secondary. That wasn't really putting any pressure on them. And I wondered last week if we would just see someone play earlier just because. And I have wondered all along if Hendon Hooker is just the safest bet at quarterback. Milton, clearly. I mean, you were at that game on Saturday, Joe. The upside that you see with his arm and his talent is insane. But we also saw what people at Michigan saw, which is missing the throws, relying too much on the arm, and just those inconsistencies. So Tennessee does have to win this one, but I don't think they're in a rush to make any change. I think Milton's their guy. I think they're sticking with him unless he shows that he's clearly not the guy. And I don't think he showed anything on Saturday that says he's not the guy, but this is certainly a different test that will give them a better answer to that.
Mike, what did you think of the receiving core, not only in the game against Bowling Green, but as Tennessee moves forward here? Obviously, Jalin Hyatt, we know what he brings to the table with the speed and the playmaking ability. A couple of drops for Hyatt in the game against Bowling Green. Tillman, Javonte Pateman. As Tennessee moves forward here and they continue to get more and more receivers available and on the field, how do you think that group stacks up when you look around the rest of the SEC?
Yeah, I don't know conference-wise, but I think it's a strong enough unit for Tennessee to compete at wide receiver. And I think certainly getting Velus Jones back fully healthy, getting Jimmy Callaway into the mix. I mean, Callaway is a guy that in the preseason maybe was generating as much praise as any receiver on the roster, and he didn't play on Saturday. So getting those two guys back in the fold, I think it's going to go a long way. But Tillman showed the other day that he can be a downfield guy and he can make some plays, and that's a nice welcome thing because he's a different wideout than the rest of that team. He's 6'3", 220-ish. Just different build, different talent that can really help this team, I think. But yeah, certainly got to clean it up. And that goes back to those inconsistencies in the passing game. I mean, Hyatt had two really bad drops that, you know, I think we talked differently about Joe Milton's game on Saturday. If Hyatt makes those catches and if Milton makes one or completes one of those throws to Tillman, because those were kind of plays that I think swing your perception of that game for the whole passing attack.
So, your sense on these two things, Mike, on Byron Young actually being able, I know Josh Heupel said, you know, they're preparing as if they'll have him. And then on Cooper Mays being able to come back. I mean, it sounds like at least with Cooper Mays, it's not like a super long-term thing, which I think is really big for this team. I also think he'd really help in this game. What's your sense for those two guys being able to play and how important is each guy, do you think, in this particular game?
Yeah, Heupel sounds optimistic that Tennessee will have both. Obviously, different reasons, and one they kind of have control over, the other they don't. Cooper Mays seems like it's a minor deal. Heupel said Monday that he was in the building walking around. They'll know more later in the week. But he's important. That's a position group they're very thin at. Their offensive line does not have depth. So losing guys there is a real problem for them. So that's someone they want to see back. And then obviously Byron Young's an NCAA thing. And Heupel sounds, you know, I asked him after the game Saturday if they expect to have him back this week. He did. Echoed the same thing Monday. But at the same time, that's not really something Tennessee can control. But I'm a little bit less concerned for Tennessee about that one because I thought Tyler Barron played really, really well against Bowling Green. And the pass rush did in general against a young, really bad offensive line. But that's a group I think that has a chance to do well enough in a game like this that you might not notice that absence as much as you would later in the season.
Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mike, obviously a big game on the ground for Tennessee against Bowling Green. Evans with 116 yards, Jabari Small with 116 yards as well. Did you learn really anything in that game about the rushing attack for Tennessee, given the quality of opponent? And if so, what do you like about this running back room? What do you still wonder about with this group as they move ahead here to Pittsburgh?
Yeah, that group's interesting because obviously Tennessee lost a lot when Eric Gray and Ty Chandler transferred, but they don't look like they've missed a beat in terms of having two guys you can roll out there. I learned more than I expected against Bowling Green, and what I saw was Tyon Evans is going to be the number one running back by the time SEC play rolls around. I think it was pretty clear that he's just a different beast. Jabari Small is certainly a capable, talented back, but the way Evans looked and the way he ran the ball, I thought was really impressive. And that third quarter, kind of when he really took over more of the carries, was kind of when Tennessee just milked out the rest of the game, and he kind of set the pace as Milton was struggling a little bit. So that's what I took away from it, is both of those guys are very capable, but I think it looks like Evans is that number one guy for Tennessee this season.
Well, how about up the middle for this team defensively, Mike? Again, like you said, Bowling Green's bad. Their offensive line is bad. So you expect to control that game up front. I thought Elijah Simmons, though, showed some activity that could be promising. It could spin forward from there. What about just the defensive front and the interior, but then also those two inside linebackers who better not get hurt this year?
Yeah, Simmons is certainly a guy who stood out. I thought he really controlled the line of scrimmage, controlled the game well, which, you know, something that you saw in spurts from just such a big guy, being able to do it longer and more consistently, I think is a really welcome sign because that interior group, I mean, Dejon Terry, that Kansas transfer, like I think he's a guy who's going to have an impact there as well. But Simmons really played well. But you touched on it, and kind of the make-or-break deal for Tennessee's defense and arguably its team as a whole is the inside linebackers. It was a pretty even split in snaps between Mitchell and Banks and Page and Beasley, which was a bit surprising to me. I thought Mitchell and Banks were probably clearly the one and two, at least from a clear-cut talent perspective. But I think it was 29 snaps for Banks and Mitchell and 27 for Page and Beasley, according to PFF. And that group, yeah, hit or miss and thin, and that's kind of that position that's going to have a big say in how successful this defense is because their experience in the front end and back end, and those groups both played well the other day, but the linebackers have to be good and have to be, like, really stout, I think, for this defense to have a shot.
Mike, last thing for you here. We got our first-hand look at the tempo of Josh Heupel and this offense. Obviously a complete 180 from what we saw from Jeremy Pruitt and his staff a year ago. What did you think of the tempo, the execution of just the operation of the offense in the game against Bowling Green, and how well do you think this style of offense is going to translate in the SEC? Maybe not even this year, but as Josh Heupel continues to grow and build his program here at Tennessee.
Man, my main takeaway was it's harder for me to keep notes now than it was before. That was the big one. I mean, I could write a novel between plays for Pruitt's offensive staff, but this one, if you blink, you're probably missing the next play. I thought they did well with it early. It seemed like they really slowed it down at points later on, just given the game situation. But early on, I mean, that first quarter, you're flying watching that and taking that in. But it seemed like they handled it well. It seemed like the communication was there from sideline to players. And, I mean, obviously Tennessee scored on those first two drives, so they felt good about how those things went. But that's probably going to continue to be a work in progress, just with such a drastic change from what many of these players are used to. And the journalists in the press box are used to.
I really need to see some of your notes from the Pruitt offense. I bet you there'd be some wonderful observations on the Jim Chaney attack.
I burned them, all of them.
Probably a good call on that front. Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel, our guest here on Robbie and Rextra. Mike, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from Rock Bottom Brewery in downtown Nashville this Sunday. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, Mark Howard, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. Join them from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. live at Rock Bottom Brewery on Broadway prior to the Titans taking on the Arizona Cardinals. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Thanks to Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel for joining us in the last segment. And, Joe, this is a very intriguing game coming up on Saturday for the Vols against Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh on the FanDuel Sportsbook is favored by 3.5 in this game. So a 3.5-point line for the Panthers in this game. And when we look back to preseason predictions for the Vols, there was a wide range, anywhere usually from 4-8 or 4-8 to 8-4. Most people landed 6-6, 7-5, 5-7. And one big difference in these predictions that we saw to begin the season was the Pittsburgh game. A lot of people had the Vols winning the Pittsburgh game. Some had the Vols losing the Pittsburgh game. There are many what I would call, I guess, toss-up games on the schedule for the Vols as we look forward to SEC play coming up. But this is a big toss-up game for Josh Heupel and company early in the season. You're at home. It's a nationally televised ESPN game at 11 o'clock and a big step up in competition from week one to week two for both Pittsburgh and Tennessee as well, with Pittsburgh destroying the UMass Minutemen 51-7 in week one.
Yeah, well, and personally, I picked the Vols to go 6-6 and lose this game. So I guess from my perspective going into the season, this is the difference between 6-7. That's a big difference too. And obviously, you know, I've got a couple SEC wins that they may not get. So this could absolutely make the difference between bowl eligibility or not for a team that, granted, may be self-imposing a bowl ban, but may not be self-imposing a bowl ban. I've got an open mind on that based on things I've heard. That is going to be interesting as we move forward. But if you're the team, that's what you're trying to do. And if you're Josh Heupel, whether that happens or not, I think it's important to have a 500 or better season. This is a big, big game. And I think it's – I mean, look, I think Vegas has it right with Pittsburgh as a slight favorite. I guess 3.5 is a little bit high. That moved from what to what? Move from what to
the first line I saw was 1.5.
Wow.
For Pittsburgh.
That's a big move. But Pittsburgh is it's a good team. You know, this is Kenny Pickett, as Josh Heupel said yesterday, like, wow, yeah, that dude's still there. He's developed into an NFL prospect. There are some people thought he'd be a mid-round pick last year. He came back to try to improve on that. I'll tell you what, based on what I'm seeing of draft-eligible quarterbacks so far really early, I mean, it's a pretty big step down this year from last year. But he's good. He has some good receivers. Crawl, the tight end, is a stud. And then defensively, you know, you can't take much from UMass. UMass is bad. But the Pat Narduzzi style, the press coverage, the quarters, which is a lot like just press man, and the exotic blitzes all day long from different angles, this is what he's going to do. And look, I guarantee you, Pat Narduzzi, who we're going to have on the show this week, you know, has looked at that film. He would never tell us this, of course. But I guarantee you he's looked at
Maybe
that film.
We'll find out.
Well, I guess it's worth a shot, you know, but watching the film of Joe Milton against Bowling Green, he's saying, yeah, I think we can bother this guy, disrupt this guy, pressure this guy. I mean, without pressure, you know, Joe Milton, to me, you know, wasn't decisive enough. So he's got to really step up to meet this challenge. It's going to be very different than the first game.
Well, and it's a big week for him in terms of not only making the throws that are available to you, but, you know, from a schematic standpoint, Pittsburgh is going to present a lot of problems to Joe Milton in this offense that you're going to have to diagnose some things at the line of scrimmage. You're going to have to read and react. I mean, they do a good job of disguising what they do. So this is a big week for Joe Milton and this offense in terms of, all right, if that first receiver's not there, you've got to go through your progressions quickly, and you've got to be able to go through them confidently as well. Like, you can't be standing in the pocket and second-guessing where you're going with the football, because if you do that, either you're going to get sacked or you're going to be late delivering the ball, and either one of those are a recipe for disaster against this Pittsburgh team.
Exactly. And, you know, I think you have Callaway – is out there. There's another element that Heupel said. You know, Callaway out there, and if Cooper Mays is fine, that's really big for the offense. They've got the weapons to, you know, to score points on Pittsburgh. And, you know, I agree with Mike Wilson on two things. One, I thought the tempo was good, but I agree that Tyon Evans is, I think he's just got a little bit more horsepower than Jabari Small, but it's a nice tandem.
They're both going to get a significant amount of carries this year. Would be my guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's probably right that, like, Tyon, you know, that Tyon will probably advance and end up with more. But again, that's one of those spots that you just didn't know. You didn't know when. And I thought, by the way, I thought Chandler looked pretty good for UNC. I mean, you lose Chandler and Gray, and you just didn't know. But they seem to be fine there. You know, this offensive line will be not just Joe Milton's decision-making, but much better personnel, and also so much emphasis on pre-snap recognition and being able to adjust to different pressures. Again, like, Pittsburgh has 97 sacks the last 2 years. That is the most in college football. They also did that with guys like Patrick Jones and Rashad Weaver, who are no longer with Pittsburgh. But that's one area where Pat Narduzzi, like, you can pretty much count on him having – you know, guys who can rush the passer, guys who can be disruptive up front.
Well, they had 5 sacks against UMass.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how much you learned against UMass, but 5 sacks.
Right. But, I mean, like, Kalijah Cansey, interior guy, very active, very athletic. I mean, he's a reason why, like, Cooper Mays is important to have on the field rather than having, like, Carvin move over to guard. And, I mean, yeah, it's a pretty big difference. I think the offense against Bowling Green, at least early on after that move, you saw the difference. I think that was part of the offense stalling. Then, you know, they came out, started the second half, and said, okay, let's just go ahead and hand off and make it 21-6 and reestablish things. And they were fine, but against a team like this, a guy like Cooper Mays is very important to have on the field.
He is, and when you do get your chances down the field, which – look, I think Tennessee will get some chances down the field in this game. I think their receivers are good enough to create separation and at least have an opportunity to throw the ball down the field. Can your offensive line hold up long enough, consistently enough? We're going to find out on Saturday morning. But when you get those chances, you got to hit them if you're Joe Milton. I mean, you can't have 3 downfield shots again and overshoot them by 20 yards. Now, it's unrealistic to expect to hit on that play all the time. Like, you know, Aaron Rodgers misses receivers down the field. You're going to miss guys every now and then, but you get, at least at some point, you've got to find a way to connect on half of them if you're Joe Milton. And then Tennessee, you at least got to respect that if you're the opponent's defense. Like, to Mike's point in the last segment, it wasn't all bad for Joe Milton against Bowling Green. He's got a huge arm. There's a certain degree of respect that comes with that as a defense. Like, when you know the quarterback has no problem throwing the ball 75 yards down the field, you've got to be aware of that if you're a defense. But at some point, you've also got to hit on those plays if you're the offense. Otherwise, it becomes way less of a concern for that defense, and they move up in the box and all these different things. So it's great to have the big arm, but you've got to find some touch to go along with it. And if Joe Milton can do that, then that's when I think you're going to see this offense start to look more like Josh Heupel wants it to look like.
Well, I agree. Also, again, many years of watching Pat Narduzzi defenses, you know, the mobile quarterback is probably the most consistent thing that would give those defenses trouble. And I know that doesn't make them, you know, all unique necessarily, but I just think that a good way to slow down a pass rush is to have design quarterback stuff, and even just have some effective scrambles out of the pocket to where, you know, maybe they're a little bit feel the need a little bit more to have a spy versus having that be another guy coming on the blitz. So, you know, slow that down a little bit. I think Joe Milton as a runner has to be a big factor in this game. So the design run stuff for sure, but also he needs to decide whatever he's going to do quicker.
Yeah, you got to process the information quicker as well. And it's a big game coming up for Josh Heupel and company, 11 o'clock a.m., the start on Saturday on ESPN. So a big game for Tennessee against Pittsburgh. When we come back, we'll switch gears, get back into the Titans, including at least one prediction that's out there that should have Titans fans about as excited as it gets. And it could have the Titans, if all things break well in this prediction, as maybe one of the greatest teams in NFL history. We'll get to all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in to Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight on ESPN 94.9 as the Sounds begin a six-game homestand at First Horizon Park against Memphis, the AAA affiliate of the St. Louis Cardinals. Pregame show with Jeff Hemp starts at 6:50, and the first pitch is at 7:05. Nashville Sounds Baseball presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans. We'll have some Sounds tickets to give away in the next segment as well.
I'm sorry.
Joe Rexrow, what's going on over there?
I'm sorry, man. Well, if that would have been a switch, there would have been no sound. Also, I have I made a coffee for myself, and I put the cup, but not under the thing. So then all the coffee went, but I didn't see the coffee. I left. I came back. I didn't see the coffee. And so I was like, oh, so it didn't come out. And then it said bin is full. Okay. Oh, so sometimes the coffee doesn't come out of the coffee maker if the bin's full of waste. So I picked up the bin to pour it, to dump it into the wastebasket,
sure,
and the hot coffee that was in had gone into the area underneath went all over the floor. So now that's a mess. But I think I cleaned it up okay. Let me know after the show.
Okay. I'll go in there and check it out.
So it actually has been
struggle
less
bus.
It's been less of a disaster day than I thought it would
be. I agree. I think you've done a good job.
Thanks.
Admirable job today by Joe Rexrode here on the program.
Just I'm motivated by the Titans media fantasy football people.
Well,
who are conspiring against me.
And speaking of motivation, we're about to provide some motivation for some Titans fans as well, because there's at least one prediction out there that is very good news for the Tennessee Titans. Titans Wire, which is a part of the USA Today network, Mike Moraitis, the author of this piece, has come out with some bold predictions for the Titans in 2021. And I'm here to tell you, if all these things happen, the Tennessee Titans are going to be in the conversation as one of the greatest teams we've ever seen in the history of the National Football League. Let's begin, shall we, Joe Rexrode, with number one on the list for Titans Wire. Derrick Henry will rush for 2,000 yards and will win the NFL MVP.
Okay.
So 2,000 yards for Derrick Henry, which would tie an NFL record for his third straight rushing title if he's able to accomplish that. And won't be denied the MVP he so rightly deserved last season, was the quote in this, which I love Derrick Henry, but
yeah,
Aaron Rodgers threw for 50 touchdowns and interceptions.
You do love Aaron Rodgers
and
more,
was the number one team in the NFC.
But you do love Aaron Rodgers.
I don't know about the rightly deserved stuff.
The thing is, you're biased, but you're also accurate. So.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Number two on the list, the Titans will have three 1,000-yard receivers. So A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, I could see both those guys having 1,000 yards, but this piece on Titans Wire says not only will those two have 1,000 yards, a third member of the Titans will have 1,000 yards receiving, whether that's Josh Reynolds or Anthony Firkser, as maybe the top two targets there.
Yeah, sure. Hey, someone will get 1,000. It's no big deal. Another 1,000 for someone. Who knows who it may be? Yeah. Okay, now we're starting.
So far, we have Derrick Henry sideways
off the cliff.
We have Derrick Henry rushing for 2,000 yards and winning an NFL MVP. We have three 1,000-yard receiving for the Titans. The third on the list, Ryan Tannehill will break the Titans' single-season passing yards record, which I don't think is that big of a jump. The Titans era, for sure, I think, which I believe he already holds.
He set last year right.
For 38-19. Now, the Warren Moon franchise record of 46-90, that's a pretty high number.
And remember, you know, it's funny about that prediction. Nowadays, people get that number on a fairly routine basis.
Oh,
we've
yeah.
seen 5,000-yard quarterbacks. 4690 in 1991 was
absurd.
Yeah, like rushing for 2,700 yards.
Yeah, it was a lot. The fourth prediction on the list, Elijah Molden will win Defensive Rookie of the Year. So Elijah Molden, we've heard some good things about Elijah Molden. We had him on the show last week. Obviously, really excited about Elijah Molden, but taking the leap of faith here that Elijah Molden wins Defensive Rookie of the Year.
I'm not 100% sure he's starting Sunday.
Exactly.
I mean, I think he's going to start, but Chris Jackson is back. I think Elijah Molden's going to have a nice rookie season. But, I mean, like, what does it take for a slot corner?
You'd have to have a bunch of picks, man.
And even, like, there is some of these awards are also somewhat based on name recognition and draft status and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, look, if you're great, then that'll ultimately prevail. But, like, what would you have to do there? Yeah, you'd have to get some – you'd have to, like, take one or two back on Mahomes, like, you know, maybe win the game in the fourth quarter with a pick six.
Yeah.
So, good luck.
At number five.
That's an interesting one.
On the list. The Tennessee Titans will finish in the top five in sacks this season. So going from 19 sacks a year ago total to top five in the league in sacks this year with Bud Dupree coming in.
So triple those sacks right away.
Yes.
I mean, look, it is a low number, granted. Like, you know, they could double the sacks and still be in terms of pass rush.
Right.
So, but, yeah, that seems lofty. That seems a little bit much.
Finally, when you factor in the previous five things that I've mentioned on this list by Titans Wire from USA Today, it all culminates with this. The Tennessee Titans will win the Super Bowl. All these things come to fruition, and the Tennessee Titans win the Super Bowl this year.
Well, I sure as hell hope so. I mean, they're not going to lose that game, are they?
Well, let me just tell you this. If Derrick Henry's rushing for 2,000 yards, breaking the he's winning the MVP. The Titans have 3 1,000-yard receivers. Tannehill breaks the single-season passing yards record for the franchise. Elijah Molden wins Defensive Rookie of the Year, and they're top five in sacks. I feel pretty good about the Titans' chances.
No one will be within 25 points of them. So my question on this would be, is this – I think these are my bold predictions are all things that are going to happen in tandem, or like I'm just throwing out a few. You know, I had to come up with a few bold predictions, so here they are, but I don't actually think that they would all happen together. I don't know the answer is. But
I'm reading this as if these are all happening.
Because, like, I did the Vandy, Tennessee game preview stuff, which now I wish I could erase from the internet entirely. and so I got all these people ripped on me for Vanderbilt, best case, 10-2. So my point was just I'm like best case going into this season, I picked Vanderbilt to go 4-8, which also seems ridiculous now, right? Like, wow, that's way too optimistic. But my best case, actual best case, would probably be about maybe, I guess, 7-5 going into the year. But the best case in this was game by game. I just said, is there any possibility, is it physically possible for Vanderbilt to beat this team on a given Saturday?
Sure.
And I came up with two that there was no way, which was Florida and Georgia. Do I actually think they're going to be? No. I picked them to go 4-8. So you know what I mean? So
yeah.
So it reads as, well, I'm saying Vanderbilt could be 10-2. I'm just saying there's only two absolute no chances. Now, right now, if you let me have another chance at it, it would be still different based on losing to freaking East Tennessee State, which, by the way, was one of the games I said had no chance. But I'm just saying.
That is true.
Maybe this guy doesn't really mean that he thinks they'll all be together. But you're right. It, when you read it, it doesn't say, like, these are independent of each other.
It does not.
This would be the greatest football team ever, perhaps.
Yes, it would.
And maybe the Titans will be.
Look, I'm not saying I don't think the Titans can't be good, because I think they will be good. I think the Titans are a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I do. And we'll get to our predictions coming up a little bit later this week. But for all those things to happen, that's a lot, man. 2,000 yards on the ground for Henry. 3 1,000-yard receivers, top five in sacks, and Elijah Molden as the defensive rookie of the year.
I think that's a lot, buddy. The thing is, if he just took out Molden and the 3,000-yard receivers, it would still be lofty, but okay. But the Molden and the 3,000-yard receivers is now. These aren't bold predictions. These are reaches.
Well, the top five in sacks is a reach.
I guess
Bud Dupree could come in here and just go nuts, and maybe that changes everything.
You know, Simmons, Autry, yeah. Landry, blitzing, like Bowen's the D coordinator fully, and now he's all of a sudden it looks like Dean Pease blitzing again. You know, I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll come close to happening, but that still, to me, is more in the real world than Elijah Molden is rookie of the year. Or just some random third 1,000-yard receiver. Yeah. Like you're just handing out 1,000-yard receiving seasons like candy.
JP from Spring Hill texting in on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Is 10-plus sacks for Jeffrey Simmons this year too crazy of a prediction?
That's a high number. I haven't seen quite the elusiveness from him to make me think he's a double-digit sack player. Doesn't mean he can't be a great player.
Right now he's got 5 sacks on his career.
Yeah, I think that's a little lofty. Now, I think, like a 5-6 sack season with all the things he does as a physical player, as a run stopper, and as a guy who still can help their pass rush a lot by getting push, would be a great season for him. If he were to get 10-plus sacks, I think that's an element we haven't quite seen. Now, I think Denico Autry with Simmons, I would pick Autry to have more sacks than Simmons this year.
You got a text that says the Titans may be top 5 in sacks in the AFC South.
Nice. See, Adam in Portland, that's how you text to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Sorry, I had to get more shots in it, Adam.
When we come back, we'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line. On the Titans, looking ahead to Week 1 against the Cardinals, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Also, some tickets to give away coming up next as well, maybe with an opportunity to see Michelle Knezovic fire out a first pitch. We'll have that coming up next.
Yes.
This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee.
Hey, is Jared listening? Jared, I hope you're listening. I want to talk college hoops real fast. Can I talk some college hoops?
You go right
Who's
ahead,
excited?
Buddy.
Michelle, huh? Yeah? Okay,
yes, Joe.
All right, Belmont has its schedule out. Some good games at LSU is a big one. Ohio, Evansville, Furman. They got a pretty awesome ESPN event. They have Drake. Then they could play Alabama or Iona, and then they could play Kansas or Dayton, Miami in the third round. So these are games that could really help. You know, last year, obviously, you didn't have the opportunity to be an at-large team. This team's good enough to be an at-large team, so they got a chance to make some hay. By the way, I don't see Vanderbilt on this schedule. Vanderbilt's got to schedule Belmont. You got to keep scheduling Belmont and local teams. And all the I want to see Vanderbilt, Memphis. We got Tennessee, Memphis this year. I like Rick Barnes, you can't not keep scheduling Memphis. Jerry Stackhouse, you got to schedule Belmont. If you guys want your sport to be in better shape, give people games with good local programs that they want to watch.
That could be a potential Rex rant.
It could be. It could be. But right now, I just think about your sport and about trying to draw eyeballs in a very competitive sports environment. Schedule the local. This would be a great game for Vanderbilt to play Belmont this year. There's a top 25 team.
There's
not embarrassment losing to Belmont. They're a top 25 team. You are not. So, and this is a Power 5 coach issue with mid-majors, and it's been frustrating for many, many years for me to see the sport not help itself more.
I like it.
There you go.
There you go. Fired up on this Tuesday morning. Speaking of fired up, we're fired up to give some tickets away to the Nashville Sounds taking on Memphis on Sunday. Not only will you be able to see the game, but you'll be able to see our very own Michelle Knezovic throw out the first pitch as well, which she's been working on. So looking forward to that coming up on Sunday. Be caller number 3 at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win some tickets to see the Nashville Sounds in action against Memphis coming up on Sunday at First Horizon Park. So let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chris in Nashville texting in. Y'all need to do a public appearance for the show. Fans of the show want to meet you guys. I would say stay tuned. Got some things in the works that could be happening on that front, so stay tuned.
Yeah,
people in public want to meet Joe Rexroad for sure.
Yeah, we're all about me. We're fine, but if we do have a public, yeah, here's Adam in Portland. Old Joe sounding like a drunk uncle.
He didn't finish his thought. Just immediately went to Adam in Portland
at a family barbecue. See, that's how it's done. Well, we all still love the drunk uncle. Funniest guy. I don't know. This is nonsensical stuff, Adam. Come on. You can be better than this. I mean, I am kind of like the drunk uncle. I mean, you're
taking
wrong.
This text rivalry personally now.
I mean, it's intensifying a little bit.
It is. So Chris wants us to have a public appearance, which, again, we're working on. We'll have some things in the works. And Adam, Portland, and Joe are now enemies on the text line.
No, we're not enemies. Just, yeah, rivals.
Frenemies.
I think he's right. Frenemy, there you go. Yeah, well, you know, I think more public, obviously, as the world hopefully changes, like more remotes, things like that could be done. So we're into it.
Christopher on Periscope says there needs to be a volunteer classic where teams from across the state come to Nashville and play.
No, I mean, look, I've written about this, Steve Cavendish. Like, there's been all kinds of different ideas about what they could do, and I totally agree. I mean, you've got way too many. This is a college basketball state in terms of the number of quality programs, men's and women's programs. You could have some really outstanding events or an event around that here in Nashville, and it's a matter of someone taking charge and getting it done. I mean, we could.
Let's take charge.
Let's do it.
We could just do it. Bring in your cats, you know.
Catter day.
Gosh, you're going to be so first on the SEC tournaments here. Boy.
I've come every year.
Okay, so you've already enjoyed some Nashville. Yep. Yeah.
The worst year was
Lexington South.
Admiral Schofield and Tennessee beat us that year. And I just said
that was the worst year.
That was a great game.
Yeah, until I'm wearing Kentucky and all these orange people walk towards me screaming at me.
That'll happen from time to time.
Orange people. orange people bad. Oh, man. That's
all
funny.
I can think of is the Oompa Loompas.
Hey. Yeah.
I like this. You guys should sit next to each other next time Tennessee and Kentucky play. I also like how we keep talking about college hoops, Jared.
Yeah, this is going against everything
I
stand for.
I know. You and Jared, you're totally on Team Jared on this.
Wait, Jared said that Jerry Stackhouse blocked him on Twitter yesterday. I thought it was the funniest thing ever. He goes, I don't know why, but he blocked me on Twitter.
He blocked, like yesterday he blocked him?
No, in general.
Oh, yeah, I think he's blocked quite a few people.
Yeah, he's an infamous Twitter blocker. I don't know if he's quite Deion Lewis level of Twitter blocking. Deion Lewis is in the Hall of Fame. Deion Lewis blocked me on Twitter. Never had a conversation with Deion Lewis in my entire life. I have no idea how he could have possibly blocked me on Twitter.
So, yeah, like, did Deion Lewis, like, get a master list of, okay, who's everyone who would be, like, Nashville media?
I don't know.
He just look around or see who certain
people? I probably tweeted about Deion Lewis at some point because he was largely awful as a member of the Titans. So maybe he just name searched and found it that way. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely blocked by Deion Lewis on Twitter.
Yeah.
Well, I can understand why you are. Because, I mean,
I don't even remember like tweeting anything necessarily, but yeah, it went south. It was amazing because the thing is, he was actually pretty decent for a lot of 2018, and then Derrick Henry goes off, and so it wasn't really necessarily that Deion Lewis was bad. He was in 2019, but he just immediately did not want to speak to another human as soon as Derrick Henry became Derrick Henry.
There's still that picture that will be the gift that always keeps on giving, though, of the picture taken out there. It may have even been by George Walker, of Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis standing next to each other in a drill, and it just looks like it's like bring your kid to work day for Derrick Henry.
Like how could those two people possibly both play the
same position in the best league in the world?
Yeah, it's kind of like Jeremy Pruitt and Clark Lee are both college football head coaches. Like, yeah, could not possibly. Be more different.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. That's for sure. Titans favored by 3 against Arizona in this game. I looked at the FanDuel Sportsbook. Titans minus 3. They say sometimes you get 3 points for being at home, so that tells me it's a pick 'em in this game between the Cardinals and the Titans.
If this were the Super Bowl, and maybe it will be, it's a preview, it would be a pick 'em.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think
I'd favor the Titans a little bit on a neutral field even.
I would say a little bit, yeah.
A little bit.
Now, I got to wait and see what the defense is. I think that's what the holdup is.
Sure.
For Vegas.
Sure.
But we're going to find out, or begin to find out, the answer to that question coming up against Arizona.
We're getting there.
And whether or not anybody can cover DeAndre Hopkins. We'll have more to say about that this week as the week goes on as well. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.